This is Khan, son of Karat. Shaga, son of Dolph, is the one who looks like Casterly Rock with hair. They are stone crows. Here is Ulf, son of Omar of the Moon Brothers, and here, Timit, son of Timit, a red hand of the Burned Man. And this is Braun, a sellsword of no particular allegiance. He has already changed sides twice in the short time since I've known him. You and he ought to get along famously, father. To Braun and the clansmen, he said, may I present my lord father, Tywin, son of Tydos, of House Lannister, lord of Casterly Rock, warden of the West, shield of Lannisport, and once and future, hand of the king. Welcome to the White Wolf Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitewolfpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinoza. That's pretty much the entire Lannister box in one passage from the book.
It's true. I feel like Danny read that passage right before when he was brainstorming card names.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, that's all I got.
Hi, I'm Aaron Glazer.
And I'm Roy Rogers.
And I'm Luke Wortley.
And I'm Will Lance.
Luke sounded depressed.
Man, no one even mentions their like board names anymore other than sometimes me.
Everyone knows who I am.
I'm faux intel at many different things.
I'm the guy the world's Twitch chat decided to argue over whether he was an asshole or not.
Yeah.
They were doing that before you were in the twat.
Yeah, the twat. That was inappropriate, sir.
Yeah, dude, this is a family-friendly podcast. Way to get us an explicit rating, Jesus.
Yeah.
iTunes doesn't listen to this podcast, come on.
Actually,
didn't I get us an explicit rating?
That can be self-rated now. I just recently discovered this in looking at some of the errors with that we've been having with the feed and iTunes and stuff. I was asking for support in the PowerPress plugin forums for some ideas on it, and evidently there's a setting now where you can set your own rating and mark whether you are explicit or not, and you must fill something in. You can't just leave it like unmarked. So they were suggesting that I go mark that one way or the other in order to hopefully rectify the iTunes issues. So number one, hopefully that works. And number two, I felt like I should mark us not explicit. I mean,
there's an occasional cuss
here and there, but it's not like we're reading
like
erotica. Well,
I hate you, Aaron.
Yeah,
I mean, you said it, dude.
But you don't know how to speak.
And to be fair, we both pointed it out.
I'm not sure what that has to do with anything.
No, well, he just called Aaron a dick. Apparently, I just like get to slide by. I love this. All right, Roy, I'm going to be a dick to you more often.
Goes wrong in Roy's life. No,
that's not
true. It's me and the shitty fake New York podcast. I get blamed for everything.
And the current election cycle.
He doesn't usually whine about that.
That one's actually
Roy
true,
is very
though.
Confident in a Hillary win, so he has not been complaining.
Welcome.
Well, you know what's not. You know what's not going to win. Lanny Klansman.
You know what else is not going to win?
Golden Tooth Mines. Or
anyone from this podcast at Worlds. It's between day one and two, and we have already.
That's true, that. Because none of us are there.
Well, Patrick.
Literally impossible.
Oh, Patrick was there. That's right. How did he do? Yeah.
But none of us on this episode.
I think he finished 5-3, I think.
That's a winning record.
It's a solid showing.
I mean, it's okay. I mean, one of the Lord of the Rings guys, though, Sean, was playing, and last I knew was 4-2, so the worst he could have done is 5-3. Should you be proud of doing as well as a guy that plays a cooperative game?
I mean,
something variants.
Better at you at major tournaments, Will?
No, but there was a run there of a year or so.
Shout out to Chris Thompson. He was 5-2 going into the last round, so we'll see if anybody from the indie meta represents.
Yeah, the Thompson family, though, they had a really bad day on the stream. Ugh.
Yeah.
Both of their stream games did not go well.
Like yeah.
I like them.
I mean, I like them.
They were guys, they were just talking.
I go over there. I go over there consistently. Whatever. Shut the fuck up, Aaron.
They were.
Whatever. Shut the fuck up, Aaron. Chris, Jeff,
he's lying. Don't trust him. He's like Bronn. He changes sides twice before the end of the first chapter.
That's a professional
transition.
Segue.
Will, you ready to talk?
Yeah. So let's go back to trying to get into the review stuff here. Does that sound good?
No, but do it anyway.
Okay, perfect. So welcome, listeners, to part two of our Lions of the Rock review. You've got the same crew as last week, plus Luke. So we'll see how that goes.
So
hopefully,
not the same crew as last week is what you're saying.
Well, the same crew plus more.
But then
it's not like there's anybody not here.
But it's not the same. That's like saying two is the same as three. Except, you know, it's not.
No. That's not. That's saying two is
same as three. It's just the same thing.
The
with
same
more.
No. Okay. Well, I'm gonna have to agree with Aaron on this one. It is not the same. It is a different crew. The addition of something automatically makes it different.
Oh my god, I literally just fell asleep while you were talking about this. Can we please start reviewing?
Plus, you know,
it's the lag.
Tell you what, I'm going to give you this, and I'm going to say in real world terms, frequently that can be true. But you probably shouldn't try to use a mathematical example because that is true in that type of example. Like the formula 2 plus 1 equals 3
is literally true. Will, what do I teach?
You know, I've been wondering that for quite a while. I've never been able to figure it out.
Oh, that's sad. Now we're not telling you.
All right.
Golden Tooth.
So, yeah, we're going to kick it with the rest of the Lannister cards.
I guess we should decide on an order, yeah?
Tell you what, how about we do the same order as we did last
week?
No,
I want to go first.
Attack Luke on?
I want to go first.
Okay, fine.
Okay, Glazer can talk about why he hates Golden Tooth so much.
I want to talk about the Golden Tooth.
You can go first, and then how about Luke, Roy, and then we'll end with me. How's that?
Sure. Golden Tooth is a Lannister location. Cost 2, Stronghold Westerlands Limited. Action, yield Golden Tooth to Wayne 1 gold. 3 gold instead if an opponent has no cards in his or her hand. So, it's a hand destruction card. And it's a bad one. You shouldn't play this card. It should be a proxy or sit in your binder.
The resounding silence is of assent, I believe.
You know, I don't know that it's quite that bad. It's still another income card. Sure, if I'm looking at it as just a kind of default of 1 gold a turn, Would I really love a two-cost limited unique card for that? No. But there may be some flexibility there with the fact that it's an action, so you can grab that gold earlier and have it available, say, for a treachery if your opponent is marshalling first or something like that. Like, it's not the absolute bottom of the barrel, but it's not a go-to card for me.
Will, what are you taking out in a Lannister deck to put this in?
Okay, that's admittedly a tough one. Lannister is pretty crowded with the good stuff at the moment.
Yeah, Roy, what do you think? I think Roy may have actually fallen asleep.
I think this card is horrible. Of course, it's economy, and it can pay for itself, in over three turns, unless you can completely empty your opponent's hand. It's just a win more card with economy, which just... Lannister already, even in its evergreen cards, already has enough snowball-y effects, particularly economy ones, that this card I just don't think is really necessary, and it doesn't push any really interesting themes. So, yeah, this card is...
You can make their hand empty, Roy.
Yeah, but you just gain more gold when that happens.
This card sucks. Let's move on.
Yeah, it's okay. Definitely kind of a D-minus card to me.
Cool. I'm going to give it an F.
Yeah, fair enough. This card's a straight F. This may be an F minus. I don't see this ever being played.
I'm going to give this an F plus out of hate.
Wow.
I think somebody will play this card. It will get played somewhere. So D minus. It still gives you gold. So
it'll get played in a bad deck.
And it pays for itself after two whole turns.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the round after it pays for itself.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a flat D in the hopes that the fact that any opponent with an empty hand activates it in melee. So I've got dreams of being able to utilize this for maybe like.
Well, no, it's a real turn. It's real positive is that it's an action, right? So if you emptied their hand, you could use it in plot before a draw and then get that gold.
Sure.
I mean,
if you decide to make the effort of taking this out of your binder, taking a sleeve out of the box and putting this card into the sleeve and then shuffling it into your deck, then sure.
I'm going to do that. It's just that there will be a little slip of paper that says what the card really is over.
Exactly.
All right.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I get a combo card. I get Mountains of the Moon. It is a Lannister non-loyal location, cost of one, unique with the Westeros trait, and it has the following reaction. After a clansman character enters play, that character gains a challenge icon of your choice until the end of the phase. An essential component to a clansman deck, and totally unplayable anywhere else. That is the card.
That is. I'm curious, though, in a clansman deck, do you go full 3x to maximize this, or maybe just 2 because once you hit that first, the others are exceptionally dead?
Is your clansman deck a Tyrion deck?
I guess that's fair. You probably want 3x if it's Tyrion and you're doing that much bouncing.
Exactly. And it's 2 if you're not.
Yep.
And yeah, it's also...
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, the problem with this card is you got to draw into it, right? Or you got to take a plot slot up with building orders. So,
play House of Dreams. Oh, wait. Wrong game.
Yeah, that card doesn't exist. That's a dead game.
Whatever, it's coming back. That's a champ card.
That's true. But yeah, those are the only... I mean, there's a lot of restrictions to this card, but those two are sort of the prohibitive ones that make it less efficient.
But it is also pretty efficient because it's one cost, right? I think that's one of the things that will make it... It's good on setup. It can help smooth setups. I think for a combo card, it's clear that FFG wants to push the Clansman theme because this is incredibly efficient location for what it does, and it's a combo. It's much more efficient than most of the other combo locations. So I think it's actually a pretty well-designed card. So I would give it a C+.
I wish there was a attachment or something that made a Lannister lord a clansman. Like Tyrion becomes a fake clansman. That would be really fun.
Can you imagine Tyrion bouncing himself?
Yeah. And then you don't get the rest of the reaction because you
don't know. That's just
it's just like.
I'm with Roy. It's a C+ card because it goes in a specific build, but in that build, it does work when you see it. So yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, I think it's a B because I think it's actually the key card to that build or that build
more than Moon Brothers.
Yeah, because this would work really well with the Burnman too, right?
True.
Or even Shaga, like this has options that
yeah.
Or
Harrenhal, obviously.
Or, I mean, Harrenhal or any of the Lannister events. Like, this is the key card along with Tyrion. So, I'm going to give it a B. I feel like if your Clansman deck is going to be good, it better find a way to find this fast.
I'm going to go with a C+ because I don't think that it is as necessary as Moon Brothers and Burnmen, because those are good with Tyrion in and of themselves on military challenges.
Are they, though? Because you're just getting that one... You're just, like... The point of Tyrion is it's twice per phase. Like, if you're going to make that deck work, you can't just be winning military challenges.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, if you don't see this, then those cards still provide some, like, justification for having built the deck in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, if you're playing a full-on jumper, you're seeing this with one of, like, 15 cards. Wow, the Cubs look like they're about to win the World Series.
Yeah.
All right, I think I'm also going to go ahead and give it a B with the acknowledgement that it, you know, of course varies wildly depending on whether it's a Clansman deck or not, i.e. play it if you're running Clansman, binder it if you're not, but I feel like it's a very strong card in that deck. A lot of versatility to being able to give icons of your choice.
All right, the next card is Lannisport Treasury. It is a non-loyal, non-unique House Lannister location, cost 1, the Westerlands traded. Has a reaction. After the taxation phase begins, place 1 gold from your gold pool on Lannisport Treasury. Marshalling action. Kneel Lannisport Treasury to move any number of gold from Lannisport Treasury to your gold pool. This is, I think, a pretty solid economy card. Like, I think this is probably... compared to Golden Tooth is much better. It's efficient and it's low cost. It pays for itself very quickly. It's non-unique, so you can have multiples.
And non-limited,
so you can set up a bunch of them. You can play a bunch of them. Lannister usually has spare gold sitting around. It plays into Lannister's gold theme in a way that doesn't really require much of an investment. So this is definitely the kind of economy card that Lannister wants. And this is, to answer Luke's question, the kind of card that you might want to cut something from your deck to find room for. Because particularly in a deck that's like running trading or some other big gold plots, this is the kind of deck card you'd want in your deck.
Yeah, it's a card you need to see early is the big problem with it. It's going to be great if you see it on turn 1 or 2, but you never want to see it late because it takes a while to build up. It's ultimately a card that's built for Valor to exist and to help you be able to play that and mitigate its low gold. Unfortunately, if you want a Valor turn 3 and you haven't seen it yet, it's, you know, a problem. But, I don't know. Let's see. It's a good card. It's just, I don't know if you can run it because I don't know if you want to see it. Like, if you're running this in your Lannister deck has to be running more draw than is the current norm.
Yeah, my problem is drawing into it. There's an interesting interaction in that. If Thrones DB is correct, it's non-loyal. So I think that that's kind of interesting. I don't know how often you're going to slot it into a banner package, considering how many efficient cards you can cram into a line banner, but that is an interesting interaction that I feel like we should bring up at least a little bit, even if it may be a card that you consider. I just don't know how many times you're going to run this in more than 1x.
I think I would maybe consider looking at it in a banner package into Martell, maybe, to utilize it with... What's their house on the plot?
Sorry, ignore me. Baseball.
Now, what's the Martell house on the... Yeah, the long plan. There we go. I don't know.
Well, I mean,
the long plan already lets you
use the long plan.
Yeah, I was going to say it already lets you bank for one turn, But this could let you be a little more flexible because you can move any number of gold into your gold pool. You could stretch that out.
But you can only get one at a time, right?
You can only put one on.
Right. Yeah, you can only put one on at a time.
So that's,
which is part of the drawback, right? Like I just don't see you devoting more than one slot to this.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I'd honestly devote the one slot. At least as the game currently is. Maybe one day.
If there ever becomes a time where, like, you can do shenanigans at the end of a turn or something, or, like, at the beginning of a new turn, then maybe.
Well, you can't get too crazy with that if the info I'm reading on Thrones TV is correct. It's a marshalling action to take the gold off, so...
I guess I never really thought I didn't read the second part.
The fact that it's a marshalling action is probably actually the weakest thing about it, right? Because you can't use it to do tricks like putting it on into the taxation and immediately taking off so that you have that one gold to do the plot phase.
Treachery during the plot phase.
Like to hit someone's iron mines or something.
You couldn't hit someone's iron mines, sir. There's no pre-plot actions either.
Yeah, with treachery? If you
cook...
No, there is no pre-plot action.
Right, but,
you have to have done it. You could do it during taxation.
That's
what my point was. You could have. But again, we are talking about an interaction that doesn't exist, right?
Right.
But I think Aaron's point about Valor, I think, is the key one. This is a card I do think a Lannister deck should take a look at and test in the Valor meta that we're going to have at the end of the month. Because it definitely is a Valor-friendly card.
So, sure.
Agreed.
Ratings?
C+.
C-. Yeah.
I think it's a straight C. It's an average card that I think its usefulness just really, really depends. So it's an average card, C.
Marshalling action knocked it from a C to a C- for me.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think I'm going the C+ route, shading it a little more positively. It's not strictly an income card, but non-limited kind of, resource smoothing maybe is the way to kind of look at it.
Spoken like a true Lord of the Rings player.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, Will, you get the best card in the pack next.
Oh, joy, how did I do this to myself?
I specifically was trying to make sure by going first I didn't get this card.
Oh, thank God.
Good call. All right. Here we go. It's the Shield of Lannisport, Tywin Lannister himself. This is House Lannister, Loyal Attachment, 3-cost, Title Trait, Lannister Lord or Lady Character Only. While you control no Lord or Lady characters with printed cost 4, other than attached character, attached character gets +2 strength and gains renown, +1 income. I mean, this is just straight, like, bad, right? On an income basis, it already doesn't start making you any money for 4 turns. And this Lord or Lady restriction is really weird. This is one we're working off of in translation, right? Like, is there a chance that maybe this isn't quite right?
No, this,
the way
this
I read
is
spoiled
in English. It was? Rob St. John had it.
Okay, because the way this reads here, like, this, it basically says that this has to go on a 4-cost character for this to work.
Oh. No. Well, you control no Lord or Ladies. Carla.
You just can't control another Lord or Lady with printed cost 4 or higher other than the attached character.
No. Yeah. See, then that text is not correct on Thrones DB. That's what I was wondering about, because on Thrones DB it says no Lord or Lady characters with printed cost 4, other than attached character.
I think there should be an or higher there.
There's no or higher.
Well, there's got to be an or. Let's just assume there's
or lower even the way Lannister stuff
weird.
Is. But.
No, well, oh. I like it. All right, my thought, I guess, which is just an assumption, was that this was most similar to what's his stupid name? Tommen, where it's like trying to, or Kevin, not Tommen. What's the other one? Kevin's
Joffrey?
Kid. No, Kevin's kid.
Lancel.
Yeah, I thought it had this. I read this as, I guess I could be wrong, who the fuck knows, that having the same triggering condition as Lancel.
Okay, or at least more similar. Okay, that would definitely make more sense, because
I think the card images are on Card Game DB. I'm gonna look at it.
Oh, I thought you had Card Game DB open. You said
I'm using Thrones DB.
No, I'm using Thrones DB because it's in order.
Okay. All right, gentlemen, I have the final text in front of me. Okay, so I'll read it. It's a title: Lannister Lord or Lady character only. While you control no Lord or Lady characters with printed cost 4 or higher. Other than attached character. Attached character gets +2 strength and gains renown +1 gold.
Okay. That is slightly better because it doesn't very specifically have to go on a 4-cost character and nothing else to do anything. But that's still awkward, right? Like, all the landing characters you want are in that 4 and higher point. And I don't think this trade-off is enough.
I mean, the idea, I think, is that you would stick it on the new Cersei. And if
or
it's
the
on
new Tyrion,
Cersei,
even.
No, but I don't think that's the intent.
I don't think it's the intent, but you could stick it on that.
Dude, yes, you can stick it on lots of people. Can I finish?
No.
The idea is to stick it on the new Cersei, who doesn't have renown and stands, so you can get, like, hopefully with Casterly, 2 intrigue challenges, double renown, discard 2 cards, and she can get a bunch of power a turn that way. She would just be this big intrigue beast.
I mean, that sounds pretty fun, but like,
I'd rather
is
just
that
have,
trade-off?
I'd rather just have Tyrion or Tywin.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That cost on an attachment.
It gives you gold. It's an unlimited economy.
I think it's also designed to create a Lanny mini curve deck that has, like, one, like, it might just have a Tywin, or actually to go back to, I actually think this does actually want to go on box Tyrion more than it wants to go on box Cersei, because you, in that deck, you might not be running any other Lord or Lady characters besides Tyrion, right? In a Cersei deck, you may be running Jaime.
But you can't run it with one Lord or Lady in your deck. That's a really fucking bad idea.
But, right, like, well, I think that's what the card's pushing for.
No, you run it with Lancel, dude.
That's true.
Perfect.
Oh, jeez.
I think you're supposed to run it not on Lancel, but with Lancel.
Right.
Because, like, then you, the character this is on gets the +2 strength.
That's what I said. I said you run it with Lancel.
Yeah. I'm explaining why for our listeners, you douche nozzle.
Well,
you know, we're on a podcast.
You know what hurts me even more looking at it, though?
It's terrible.
Like, well, yes. But, I mean, it has to go on a Lannister Lord or Lady. But the no Lord or Lady caveat does not specify house. So it mucks up banner options for you as well.
Oh, that would have been a cool theme, like boosting playing only one or two Lannister lords or ladies with, like, in a Lannister deck, like a false banner type thing. That would have been cool.
It would have been sweet too, like if they ever print the Northern Clansmen as a, like, non-loyal Stark guards, that'd be sweet.
that would be fun. That would have, I guess, maybe some relation to this card through Tyrion.
So, given that this card is terrible, can we give it an F and move on?
Yeah, it's an F.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on the F on this one.
You can pay 3 and have 1 land limited economy that goes on a character. If you have a Lannister Lord or Lady.
It's non-terminal.
So you can pay 3 multiple times to get 1 gold back per time.
You get renowned.
6 plots.
It'll you get renown.
You get renown if
you
don't have any other Lord or Lady. You get nothing but the gold guaranteed.
All right, I'm not defending this card. This card sucks.
I'm giving it an F. I hate this card. Like, I think this is just shit piss poor design.
Yeah, sure, it's an F.
Can I just throw out one just quick general thought here?
No.
In that, I'm not sure I understand what FFG's viewpoint of the loyalty system in the game is when you wind up with things like the Hound and Gregor that are extremely strong with very flavorful abilities, not loyal, and thus see play everywhere and dilute, like, house kind of
It's the Shield of Lannisport. It has to be loyal, while the Hound is the traitorous dog.
They're loyal. I just... it just makes me sad.
Okay. I think there's two reasons, right, that looks like why FFG does loyalty. One is the one Aaron mentioned, which is Nedliness. Like, they do obviously take that into consideration. Like, the reason why both versions of Ned are non-loyal is because, you know, he worked with the Baratheons, right?
Wait, also, do you think they knew the Hound was good when they made him?
No, I don't think they did.
I mean, like anywhere near that good, because that's the first cycle, right? The first chapter pack. Like, I honestly don't think they knew what they were doing when they printed cards like the Hound and Merry.
I agree.
I think that they're very intent on keeping two game mechanics specific to a faction, which is card draw and economy. So, like, if you're going to make a non-loyal draw or a non-loyal economy card, then there better be hella restriction on it. I think that that's what part of the problem, too.
Yeah, possibly. I suppose it feels less interesting or useful or flavorful to me as a mechanic if a primary factor of whether something is loyal or not is whether it's economy or draw, when they've given that virtually to every house in some form now.
But the idea is
it's not reinforcing a house theme, it's just locking those into houses.
Well, no,
everybody gets it.
Everyone gets draw, but how you do it is what's different. And I actually really like that. I think that's one of my favorite design decisions.
I actually really like it, too.
Yeah, it's like, for a Barry, you have to win power challenges if you want draw, or dominance. For a Night's Watch, you just get draw for weird shit. But, like...
For like, literally almost sacrificing dudes.
Yeah, Lannister, you get intrigue draw. Like, there's always a little bit of different shit for you to get draw. I like that.
I do, too.
The main problem is not all draws created equal, right? I mean, this is one of the central problems with the core set that became obvious, I think, as the first cycle came about, and we've sort of forgotten, is that not all the variants of draw are created equal. I think Martell's, for example, has the weakest draw of any house until the army came out.
I was going to say that army's pretty dope.
Right. So
yeah,
I'm also a person who doesn't really like the fact that FFG continued that 1.0 design decision of balancing the game around access to draw, and one of the ways in which, you know, Tyrell draws a bunch of cards but has shitty cards. Like, I think it's not necessarily very fun, or, you know, this faction doesn't draw cards but has broken cards is just not very fun. But I also think the other consideration is FFG also clearly wants you to banner to a house for certain themes. Like Greyjoy is the most obvious one, right? You banner to Greyjoy for saves and stealth, right? And Lannister, you banner to Lannister for economy and efficiency. These are themes that they've said, okay, when you pick this banner, you get this set of tools to supplement your deck. So there's a lot of decisions that they made to sort of create the loyalty and non-loyalty system, which I think was clearer in the core box and has sort of diluted over time. But that's still, I think, the basic design principles are still there.
Faction bleed. All right, can we go to the next card? Because this is terrible.
Let's do it.
Valerian Steel Dagger is the best non-agenda in the
pack. I'm so sad that you got this card.
Yeah, it's almost like I chose to go first. House Lannister non-loyal attachment cost 2. Valerian Steel and weapon. It is not terminal, which is awesome. During intrigue challenges, attached character gets +2 strength and gains stealth. And can I just say how funny it is that, like, Shield of Lannisport has to go on a Lannister Lord or Lady, and this can just be plopped right on Miri?
I mean, it's fun. I don't know if funny is the right word. Tragic?
You can pop this on Miri, you can pop this on Kat. Like, anyone you want that has an intrigue icon. Well, you can
Cersei.
Sit on someone who doesn't, but...
Cersei, for sure.
This is the single best card to make Reigns of Castamere deck work.
Oh, dude, core Jaime's a great target for it, too.
I mean, even the shitty Jaime's is not terrible for it.
Yeah, but you're not playing shitty, so you're not this playing. Still doesn't make that Jaime good.
No, nothing makes that Jaime good.
And it's a weapon, so it goes really well in some Night's Watch Lion decks.
Night's Watch wants the intrigue.
Maybe be searched out, even if you desperately want, right?
Ooh, you could banner Kraken and ambush it.
There you go.
Yeah, no, there's legitimately really good options for this card. It's a fantastic card.
This card is like, as far as positive attachments go, something that I want to see more of. Because, like, the Corset days had a lot of good positive attachments that you wanted to get rid of, and so everybody ran Confiscation. And it's continued on, and everybody sees that attachments are a real problem, but because of negative ones, right? The Icon Strippers, or Craven, or Milk, or, you know, whatever, insert thing here. I want to see more positive attachments that make more decision points, like, apparent during the game.
You know who this is absolutely the best on?
Besides Miri?
Yeah, I mean, in Lannister, sorry. Because Miri and Kat are the two best targets, right?
Yeah. Maybe Khorne Cersei would be a good target?
Yeah, Khorne Cersei.
Yeah.
Oh my god, you are getting...
Yeah, that's disgusting. I mean, just, I love it. I love this card. I think that it is a design decision that I want to see more of across all factions. And two-cost attachments
is... not even unique.
I know. Two-cost attachments is about the right cost slot for something of this magnitude. I really want to see more of this.
So I'm going to give this an A-.
I agree. A-.
You guys are higher on it than me. It's still an attachment that, you know, I feel like slots for attachments are much more limited than the flexibility we get with characters or even locations, even in second edition. So I'm not sure this goes above a B for me.
I'm giving this a straight A. Like, I don't see a deck that doesn't slot one of these in. It's non-loyal, so you can stick into banner package. If you see it, great. If not, it's not the end of your day. Like, I think that a lot of decks are going to run this. I think that this card is absolutely spectacular, even if it gets confiscated the next turn, because you're holding a Milk or something. I mean, there's so many good options for it, and it's an evergreen card, and so you're always going to be able to run this and Milk of the Poppy. I think that this card is awesome. It's an A for me.
Okay, listeners, unfortunately, after talking about his favorite or maybe second favorite card in this portion of the box, Aaron had to run rather quickly there, so hopefully everything's good to go on his side. So we're going to keep trucking without him and see what happens. Luke, why don't you lay this next one on us?
All right, so continuing the theme of reprinting old CCG cards, except this one's totally different than I thought it would be. This one is an event. It is loyal. It is cost 3. House Lannister, of course. It has the challenge's action. Choose an opponent who has won a challenge against you this phase. You may initiate an additional military and intrigue challenge against that player this phase. Max 1 per phase. So, the cost of 3 may seem prohibitive, but I think that this card will see play. I don't know that it's necessarily a staple in all Lannister decks from here on out, but this card is super sneaky with the other plot that we have coming up. Littlefinger's meddling and the ability to flip new schemes and yeah, all the different ways to reduce events and that kind of thing, and the ability to gain gold during the challenges phase that we're seeing. I like this card. This is a card that I think produces more decision points during the challenges phase. I don't know how many I'm going to slot into a deck, but I'm really excited to buy my copy of the box and try out my like super all-in intrigue deck with this card and all the other shenanigans associated with it.
I actively dislike this card. I think it's under-costed. I'm sure Aaron will push back at me, but it's... Yeah, for the ability to initiate two additional challenges at the cost of losing one challenge.
I guess to be fair, one shitty Greyjoy event is 4 cost.
And it's not like, and it's, yeah, and it is loyal, so if you're running Lannister Fealty, it goes down to 2 cost, which puts it within range of Tyrion, right? And it's not hard for Lannister to save 1 gold in the marshalling phase and then pop two more gold from Tyrion. Like, I think it is a frustrating card to play against. There's a plot in the box that makes this card just ridiculous, particularly in a Rains deck that, you know, tries to go second. It pushes a Lannister go. Yes.
Wait, you mean
it pushes Lannister go second theme. I just don't like the ability to initiate several extra challenges. If it was just an additional intrigue or military challenge, I think it would be fine. But the ability to, you know, do four to five challenges against an opponent is just ridiculous, I think, with Lannister. Like, I just don't like the design of this card. I don't like that it's evergreen. I think it has a high potential of becoming broken and frustrating to play against. So it's still, I think, a pretty solid card. It's not going to go in every Lannister deck, but I think a Lannister deck that chooses to build around it, particularly with Reigns, will have real success.
See, I like this design because I think that it builds on the two icons that Lannister has an abundance of and capitalizes on the one that they really lack. And if you're going to push the go second theme, then you're going to have to be letting through a bunch of stuff in order to be able to get this off and, like, really maximize its potential. I think that it's appropriately costed because you're not going to be using your Tyrion trigger to play Put to the Sword, Just Go First all the time, or Trial by Combat, or insert other event here. And you're going to have to build your plot deck around playing this card. You're going to have to draw into this card. I don't think that it's as much of a problem as you think it's going to be. Besides the fact that Lannister already has a bunch of good stuff that they want to shove into a deck, and I'm not sure how many slots this is going to take up, and any slots that takes up means that it may take up other slots of other evergreen cards, like Put to the Sword or Tears of Lys. I think that this card is appropriately designed, and I think that it is super deadly because, you know, it does take advantage of the fact that there is a dearth of power icons in Lannister, so when you lose the sort of claim to the throne, then you just go ham out in the Riverlands or whatever it is that you do in the small council chamber. I think that it's a thematic win. I think it's a good card. I think this card is awesome.
I mean, I've got to say, you guys have mentioned nearly everything I've thought of here. I'm on board with this being pretty awesome as well. Three cost does look pretty out there, but I think it is definitely achievable for Lannister. And as you said, this provides kind of a way to capitalize on Lannister's weak icon. Even if you need to throw the power challenge at your opponent and dare them to block and win it, which I think is an amazing bit of flexibility on this side. Doesn't say that you have to be the defending player, which is pretty huge.
Also, Roy, you got to remember, the more resets we get in the game, the smaller the boards are going to be. And pulling off a card like this is going to
be...
We'll
see. I don't know. I was proven, I think, largely correct with my assessment of Trial by Combat, which is another card I really don't like. So I just don't like these Lannister claim manipulation, Lannister additional challenge events at all. Like, I think it's a kind of a theme that I just really... Where the Lannister card pool is right now, I'm very, very skeptical of this event. Hold on. I think it's a good card. Like, I'm going to rate it as, like, a B+ card. It does require you to build around it, so it's not a straightforward A, but it's a very good card. But I just don't like its design. I don't like the design space it continues to move Lannister into. And I just am very skeptical of powerful Lannister events because I think it's the faction that events play into its themes, and Lannister already has a huge number of these events. And the fact that this card will never cycle out, I find frustrating. It will.
Trial by Combat will, though.
It will.
Eventually.
Was there a Lannister always pays his debts? Was it an exact reprint in 1.0 as it was in the CCG?
Yes. Yeah, it was a reprint.
It was exactly the same. Yeah, that card was awesome.
Yeah. You know, there is another thing that I find very interesting about a Lannister always pays his debts. And it may be something that really jumps out at me because of who I played first edition with. And that is the timing of this event. It's easy to kind of look at this and shorthand it in your head quickly, especially if you're skimming, and to misunderstand it incorrectly as a reaction to losing a challenge. It is not. It is a challenge's action that has a specific play requirement of already having to have lost a challenge. Well, sorry, that's not even a play requirement. You could still, I suppose, no, let's see. The way second edition is, you couldn't play if you can't choose a player, right? Regardless, it is not actually a reaction to the challenge that you lost.
Right.
Which is something I hit with Greg a lot with reinforcement events in the CCG, or sorry, in the first edition, because that kind of wonky timing makes it much harder to plan around and much easier to kind of plan your moves and challenges on the board with certain things available, and for that to change drastically. It's kind of the ambush of events, right? I may block your military challenge or whatnot, even if I plan on losing it or do wind up losing it, but not realize, oh yeah, because my opponent lost that power challenge, you know, two challenges ago, they could play Lannister Pays His Debts. Well, now they're going to be coming at me with this other stuff, and I knelt my character to, you know, keep him off an unopposed power or something. I just think it's very interesting for folks to watch the timing on that. In my experience, that type of thing is kind of a subtle but strong power.
I give this card a straight B. I think the theme pushes it from a B minus to a B to me. I like this card, almost every single aspect of it. It's super interesting. It's an actual fun card that isn't just like a point and click, like murder stuff. I think it's great.
Okay. Speaking of cards that have, interesting timing, we get to, Yes.
Wait.
I thought you did.
Did
Will.
You rate that one?
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Did I rate it? I didn't rate it.
Yeah, well, Roy gave it a B minus.
Okay, I missed Roy doing it. I think I'm going to give it a B plus. I really dig this type of thing, so I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt over that cost. I think it's going to be quite strong.
Ready? All right, Insidious Scheme.
Ready.
One cost loyal event. Reaction. After claim is applied for an intrigue challenge, you won by 5 or more strength, draw 2 cards. 4 cards instead if the losing opponent had no cards in his or her hand. This is a very interesting event for a couple of reasons. I think one, because of its timing, it is not a reaction to winning the challenge. It's a reaction to claim being applied, right? So obviously, you know, your opponent's hand may not be empty after you win an intrigue challenge. So, you know, you got to wait until claim is fulfilled for their hand to be empty. So that makes sense on a mechanical level. But of course, it keeps your ability of, say, drawing 4 cards into a tiers and then tiersing someone is, you know, limited because it happens after the tiers window. So I think that's actually a pretty good safety valve design. The card, and I think this is an interesting card. I think this is actually one of the more interesting force your opponent to have no cards in hand cards. Because it has a basic use if you get into a situation where you won't be able to empty their hand entirely. You can still draw 2 cards. You can still dig 2 cards deeper in your hand. The bonus of being able to empty their hand and draw 4 is there, and that's great if you can pull that off. But if you can't, cycling this for 2 cards is pretty acceptable. And so I really like this card. It's a draw. It's It pushes the theme while also being a pretty efficient card. So I actually think this is very solid. It won't necessarily see play in a lot of Lannister decks, but Lannister combo decks, I think, will definitely really, really enjoy this card. And of course, Lannister Reigns decks will also really like this card.
Oh man, I think you are much more positive on this card than me. I think it's fine. I'm not sure that I feel just the basic kind of cycle of one card for two cards, a net plus one card and a minus one gold, plus the need to win by five, really makes me enthused about it. Four cards in the way second edition is, without the draw cap and such, I think appeals much more to me. And of course, the reserve value kind of reins that in on the back end. But the catch, of course, is ensuring that. I just don't know. There are, some very strong Lannister and neutral events fighting for slots in my Lannister decks. And despite it being draw, I just don't know that I am looking to, cut treacheries or trial by combats or something to fit in Insidious scheme. So, yeah, I'm less than enthused.
I'm actually with Will here. I'm not very excited about this card. I'm excited about it from a design standpoint in the sense that it does push combo decks with Lannister rather than just shove a bunch of good stuff into a deck and turn cards sideways, right? So I like that, but ultimately I'm decidedly underwhelmed. I don't know. It's a C-minus card. Like, it's good because it's draw, and it's bad because it's not going to be a staple card that makes your deck work unless you have a specific combo you want to get off.
So I'll say this is a B-minus.
Yeah, I feel like this is probably a C minus for me.
So we're all in agreement. Since Aaron's not here, Roy was a little higher on it than we were. My turn, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Ooh, I get a cool card. I get Daring Rescue. It is another event. It's a non-loyal event, cost one. Play only if you have a knight character. Challenges action. Return a character you control to its owner's hand. Then, have a knight character you control gain one power. Yeah, give me power gain in Lannister. I'm down. Give me a card that promotes to run Banner Rose, because Tyrell is my other house. Give me a card that promotes to run banners in general, just to get more knights on the board. Especially when you have all of those effects that discard or kill things that come into the challenges phase at the end of the phase. I think this card is a really, really neat design. It opens up a lot of interesting interactions. It opens up some serious combos. Because it's just a character. So it opens up the space for down the line to enter or leave play. I think this card is awesome. I really, really, really love this card.
Oh yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, this doesn't fit in just kind of the good stuff decks, but this is the sort of thing that gets my Shaga brain kind of turning on. Okay, where are the cards that we can try to abuse this for maximum value? We've got Kevin in this box. I can see Littlefinger potentially in the Tyrell package, like you were talking about. You could be looking at, is it Horror or Slobber that lets you search for a lady? I always forget.
It's Hobber.
Yeah. So you can use that for some extra value. Let's see. You could potentially be using this with Martell to get more draw out of the army.
Are they knights? Starfall Cavalry, are they knights?
You know, I don't remember if they personally are, but you could bounce them so you could replay them, was what I was thinking about.
Yeah, I was just curious if, like, you didn't have
a House of Dane
knight or something else on the board, if you could play it. That's what I figured. So you would have to have a Jaime or a Gregor or something on the board already.
Well, it doesn't have to be a Lannister.
Or like you said, they're Dane knight or something.
No, that's what I'm saying. Or House Dane Knight would be the only other, and Knights of the Sun would be the only other native knights that
I actually see this as like it's a good Tyrell Banner of the Lion deck card. Which I think adds milk protection. It's good valor protection. It's good, you know, to just cycle characters like Kevin, who's also non-loyal. Like, I think there is a solid. And I think Lancel's not loyal either, right? So there's a decent knights package in Lannister now that you can put this in, and this gives you flexibility for a variety of reasons to get the tears off your Randall, right? Even if he's got power, you'd much rather have him safely in your hand at the end of the challenge phase than dead, right? I think it is a really interesting Lanny knights card, and not just or Banner of the Lion knights card. So I think I really like that. It sort of gives you a different reason to banner to the lion than just Tyrion Hound. I think this is a really interesting card, and it's got a good cost, you know, one gold, which is very reasonable, even for decks that, you know, might not have the same economy as Lannister does as a native faction. So I think this is a very, very solid B minus, because it just getting a milk off an important character and then being able to replay them is just huge, and get a power out of it, right? Because you can also just use this to close the game in a Knight's Rush deck, so it's great.
I just want to say that Roy brings up a really good point, that in a post Valor meta that we'll inevitably see certain decks run Wildfire, First Snow, and Valor, that popping dudes back to hand, especially really important ones, if you've got the plot deck and economy to support it, is incredibly important, especially when you take into account your own resets and that sort of thing. If you're vulnerable and you can gain power out of it, then that's huge. I think that that's something that maybe we should do an episode on later, Will.
Yay for topics. But I feel this is probably a solid B for me. It does require a specific trait to be active, but nothing so very specific as Kingsguard or Clansmen. There are a lot of good kind of generic knights around that are played in decks that are not specifically devoted to that, and just a lot of flexibility. Like Roy noted, to protect you from some negative stuff, or to play around plots, as Luke mentioned, or to try and dream up some more kind of combo-y value, like I was talking about. I just think this has a lot of application. It's not for every deck, but it's got a lot of very solid flexibility.
I think I'm a bit more bullish on it. I think it's a B+. I see this card getting played quite a bit, especially with all of the ambush shenanigans. And if you're not running draw, this is sort of a pseudo card replacement. So I think this is really, really good. I think it's a B+ card.
We're doing.
Are we on to the next one,
yep,
then? Head on over to the.
Did Roy rate it?
I gave it a B-. So we're going to the last card we're going to talk about, which we're really including because we wanted Aaron to give his opinion on this, right? Oh, there's the plot, right?
Wait a minute. There's two more cards.
I forgot about the plot.
Yeah,
well, that's sort of an advanced review of the plot. I forgot about the plot. Okay, so give me one second.
Why don't you lay it
over there? the plot is Lions of the Rock. It is a loyal, like all of these plots, Lannister plot, 6 reserve, 4 gold, 4 initiative, 1 claim, kingdom traded. Reaction, after the challenge phase begins, gain 3 gold. Boring. Like, I don't see with a faction that already and it's just out of the core set. I think if this was just a core set plot, you wouldn't play it. And I think it being evergreen doesn't add anything interesting to the Lannister card pool. There's already evergreen cards both within this set and in the core set that that give Lannister gold in really efficient ways. There's infinitely more interesting plots, of course, in the cycles and in the core set and in this box. So I think this is just sort of a really just dull Lannister plot. Like it's a waste of space, really. So
yeah, I think dull is probably the best word for it. It's just slightly worse than a 7-4-1-6, right? And it's got the kingdom trait. Like, I suppose if you get naveled with it, then you still get 3 gold during challenges, but that's not something to write home about.
Nobody's if this was
some people will. Are.
Yeah, that, I mean that's fair. But if this
some
if
people
this was
in this least, particular
which means
meta,
you should run naval
at the moment. We'll see what happens when Valor hits. Yeah, that is just the time to do it.
Please go ahead against the Barra Summer deck. Go ahead.
If this just had a small tweak and it was when revealed instead, like, I think I would be more intrigued. I still don't think it would be great, but that extra little bit of flexibility would suddenly look very interesting. But right now, it's just dull.
Okay, so my biggest problem with this is that 4 initiative is just enough to lose to other big-time aggro plots. So you're wanting the 3 gold because you want to play out some other stuff because you've got Econ to be able to like force through whatever shenanigans you got going in the challenge phase. But if you're running up against a First Snow or a Wildfire or whatever, and you're running against a good player, they're going to go first anyway and try to shut down all your stuff. So that's one component of it. But the other component of it is that, like, you remember when everybody went bonkers over the Lanny Loyal plot that came out in the first cycle, Wardens of the West?
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody plays that shit. So this is objectively worse. And I don't see it getting played.
I think Luke's point, though, about its initiative is actually one of its bigger drawbacks, right? It loses to just almost every commonly played plot, right? Filthy Accusations, Confiscation, Wildfire. Is it the same? I thought Filthy
was
5.
It's the same as Filthy. But...
Oh, it's 4-4-1? See? I apologize. It's 4-4-1.
But Filthy's a control
plot. Well, I mean,
plot.
Yeah,
it
but you're always
going to
lose
plots.
To, like, the Greyjoy plots. Like, that's the entire point of the Greyjoy plots, right? But I don't just mean, Rise of the Kraken. I mean, like, you know, Weapons at the Door, Battle of Oxcross, all that stuff, right? I think the fact that it loses to some of the more, like, mid-range plots is more of a problem. Because this, to me, is a mid-range card, right? It's a card that lets you spend all the gold you have in the marshalling phase and not have to save anything, and then still get some gold without Tyrion to play events in the challenges phase. And the fact that someone playing Confiscation, a standard plot that you find in almost every plot deck, and beat you and can set, you know, screw up the tempo you're trying to set up is a big deal. Like, I think if it was had a better initiative, it would be more playable.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, this is another sort of support the box Tyrion plot, right? It's meant to compensate for the insane ability of the core set Tyrion. If you're running the Clansman deck and you need to jump stuff in via whatever, you know, means you have, there's ways that you can do it now. Or if you run a run kill events, there's ways that you can do it now without having to be reliant on the intrigue trigger of the core Tyrion. I don't know. I think this card is a D+, which isn't a real grade, But it's a D plus because I don't really see people making space in their plot decks. There's so many better plots to run. But it's not objectively an F because 3 gold during the challenges phase can be a huge swing.
I agree, it's a D.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe even a D minus. The plot slots are just so few and far between that everything else looks worse.
It's just enough gold to play Lannister. It's
another argument against it.
Oh, it is. It is.
That's why I give it a D plus, because it annoys Roy.
All right, now we have the not Lannister, but might as well sort of be Lannister, at least thematically. I kind of like the name of that. Thematically.
Okay.
Reigns of Castamere.
Okay.
Lannister. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, Reigns of Castamere is our new agenda in the box. It is a song agenda, which is entertaining to me. I really want something to do anything with song traits later in the game.
Again, spoken like a true Lord of the Rings player.
Yes.
How about the new chapter pack, man? Or the adventure pack?
We can delve into that.
Yeah, we'll do it in props and slots. We'll do it in props and slots. Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, so here we go. Your plot deck must be 12 cards, including exactly 5 different scheme traded cards. During the plot phase, scheme cards are not considered to be in your plot deck. And reaction, after you win an entry challenge by 5 or more strength, kneel your faction card to reveal a scheme plot. If that card leaves play, remove it from the game. And of course, designed by the 2013 Joust World Champion, Alvaro. So yeah, there you have it. I'm going to go ahead and tell listeners up front, we've talked about this some on the show before. I'm sure we'll do a lot about it later. We are not doing an exhaustive review of this agenda right now. We're going to keep this about the same length as the other ones and kind of move the episode along. That said, I love this. I think this is by far the most interesting, inventive new agenda that we've seen so far in second edition, and provides, I think, a very compelling reason to experiment, to maybe consider revisiting some older scheme plots, maybe to revitalize a more control-oriented build out of Tyrell as kind of a secondary intrigue house, which has been an aspect that, you know, you could see there were some cards for, but it's never really coalesced into anything. I love this. It even plays into this whole kneel your faction card restriction in a very, I think, real consideration. I can't say enough in favor of this card from both design and I think power level perspectives.
Go ahead, Luke.
Okay, so I want to say that we were wrong when we reviewed the season's agendas in relation to this, because the season's agendas have had an absolutely huge impact on the worldwide meta. And this is going to have a huge impact on the meta as well. So I want to say that we were wrong, and I want to admit to not being as high on the seasons as I should have been. But in the context of this particular conversation, this agenda just opens up so many new deck types. I absolutely love it. There's going to be so many people trying to run Reigns. Mono faction decks are going to become the norm here soon, I think. I think we're going to start seeing banners fade out a little bit unless they start printing cards that are just like so unbelievably powerful and non-loyal, which I kind of like. I kind of like seeing houses play differently rather than just shove a bunch of good stuff into a deck and then slam it down and turn it sideways. This card rules. As soon as you reveal your faction and agenda, no matter what your faction card is, and you have that massive plot deck, everybody plays the challenges phase differently. And I think that that is good for the game. I'm very, very excited.
I am also very excited about this card. I think that this card... I'm going to slightly push back about Luke saying I think we did probably underrate the season's agendas a little bit. But at the same time, this card does make the season's agendas, which did end up being pretty impactful, look small potatoes. Because this is a card that really fundamentally makes you rethink both your plot deck and your draw deck and the challenges phase, and also the challenges phase for your opponent. I think it pushes factions like Lannister and Tyrell really high up. I think we're going to see a ton of Lannister Reigns decks. I think there's certainly probably a Martell build out there as well. But don't be surprised if you see sort of weird factions that you wouldn't expect to be running this. I mean, you probably won't see a Greyjoy Reigns, but you know, you may see a Stark Reigns or Baratheon Reigns that...
Baratheon?
Yeah, I mean, the question is consistency,
Gothic,
right?
Dude.
The priest,
yeah, and, yeah, and, drawing you know, it, like those
you know,
priests.
Euron's good in that deck, but you know he's expensive, and he's. But anyway, not specifically deck building here, but I think that this is a really. It's probably slightly broken. Plot manipulation is really powerful. If you, I'm sure this was true in the CCG, but definitely by the end of the first edition of the LCG, you know, you saw Worlds was. You know, one of the big final Worlds decks was a plot manipulation deck. It's a dangerous ability, even if it's kept in check by the faction. Cardneal, the ability to flip into Littlefinger's Meddling in the middle of the entry, the middle of the challenges phase, and then for free, Tears put and Olenna's cunning, like empty your hand of events. There's you know to kneel someone on spot kneel or to wildfire in the middle of. Challenges phase, or to flip out of a Valor. There's a lot of really clutch, flexible plays that come out of this agenda, and it's extremely powerful. So get ready, not just because of the novelty of it, but get ready for really strong decks out of factions like Tyrell, Lannister, and Martell to hit the Star Championship season very hard after Worlds. So this is an S-rank card for me.
Yeah, I think this is an S too. And note that it just says after you win an intrigue challenge by 5 or more strength. That doesn't say as an attacker.
Correct.
So, I mean, it does manipulate it all in that way. And I think you're right, Roy, in that way, but about the season's agendas. But I think that it's important to note that, like, new agendas that come out that aren't banners are super important. And the fact that you're like, you're not going to just see Lanny Reigns everywhere because there are going to be more things coming down the pipe, I think is going to be a big deal. I think we get a few good cards that support this agenda in this box that don't necessarily make it overpowering to the point where that's the only deck that you'll ever see. I think that there's actually some good out-of-faction cards in this box that they'll review on a future episode. But yeah, I think this card is just a, like, home run in so many ways. I don't really know how thematically it ties to the actual song or whatever, but that doesn't really bother me because the mechanics are so much different, and I love it. I can't say enough about this card. I want to do a whole episode about it.
Well, it turns out we will probably do that before long. But
by the way, real quick, the word different is super important because you can't just run double wildfire or whatever. So I think that is actually a good distinction. Can you imagine if you just like ran a bunch of
two filthies to be able to flip two challenge phases in a row? Yeah, it's kind of nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, so I'm glad that they put that distinction on there. But, Roy, I think you're right. There's a lot of flexibility there. It totally changes the way the challenges phase works, which I enjoy. Except all the Stark shenanigans still.
Cat loves and hates this agenda.
So there you go. There is a check. Yeah, right.
Ooh.
There are some checks on it. At least, well, maybe not enough, but there's some built in at the moment. We'll see what comes down the pipe.
All right, so there you have it, guys. This is our admittedly a bit truncated due to the depth of ideas we have on the agenda review of the second portion of the Lions of the Rock box. So tune in next week, hopefully, for the bulk of everything else. All right, World's Chat. We've got a little bit of news. It may be a little late overall by the time listeners listen to this, but we've been following it, I think, with bated breath today as things have been rolling. I've just been looking for updates on social media.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, one of my props of the streams away was be the public transportation system in Philadelphia is basically shut down, which has led to my work being very, very slow, so I've been able to serendipitously watch the stream for most of the day. So I was able to watch most of it. And in general, it's been – well, the first thing, and I was going to say this in props and slops, but I want to say this first. FFG's production values have been really, really excellent for their stream. Evan, part of their marketing department, was sort of the through line through the whole day at the commentating desk. They had Nate at certain points. They had the former lead designer of Netrunner as well in the commentary booth, and they were all excellent. And the quality of play that we saw in the stream was also Evan's awesome.
Evan,
I think FFG
awesome.
Should
Evan
really make him
awesome.
The face of their LCG sort of stream experience. I think he should be sent to Gen Con to also stream and comment. He should be sent to Nationals. He could even be sent when the European Championships go. I think he is an excellent sort of through line that if you're following competitive LCGs, because he's very articulate and he understands the game really well. And I was just really impressed with him. And the level of play on the stream was also very solid. The Twitch chat for a while got a little bad in the middle of the day, but got better. It started off well and got better towards the end. So I would just say the
what was the cause of all that, Roy?
It was just a bunch of trolls, the usual shit that you see.
Yeah.
I'm just really impressed, particularly compared to last year. I feel the stream was much weaker last year, and it was really, really nice. The drawback was, of course, there was a lot of downtime. I think next year when they do, it's just Netrunner and Thrones and maybe a side of L5R, that they should have two tables running. That way, if there's a quick blowout game, where a Lanyu Dragon deck is blown out by a Night's Watch Winter in like two plots, that the stream just doesn't end and then there's an hour while we're all waiting for the round to wrap up. So there could be two games being, recorded, and that just is also more content for the FFG YouTube. So I think as an experience from someone watching from afar, it was actually very good. If we look at the top 16, which is what we're able to see right here, there's a mix of sort of new names, a bunch of new European names in particular, but also some sort of like, more famous for 1.0 players like Steve Simone, my good friend, co-host of the Second Sons, Luke Sadesky, Ryan Jones, Ryan Wood, just there's a good mix of new faces and old faces in the top 16. Of course, multiple world champion Sam Bratz. I actually think Worlds in the end actually turned out really well this year, even if attendance is not what we expected it to be.
Yeah, I was really surprised to hear those reports of all the empty tables that were set up and not filled in. It's a little disheartening to look at. Not only because, of course, we would rather have more there, but disheartening that there was such the mad rush for tickets and the inability to sell or transfer them, and then the poor timing of when Thrones was just a bad deal all around. So I don't know. Better next year, I hope. The other thing that I did want to mention that maybe was less great than I was hoping for, but is perhaps not terribly surprising, is the mm-hmm. faction breakdown. FFG posted a really cool graphic of all the faction breakdowns with percentages. This is of the field at large. To the best of my understanding, this is only primary faction, not banners or agendas. And far and away, Lannister is the winner, so to speak, here with 38% of the field in an 8-faction field. That's just killer. And I was looking at the top 16. Out of those that we know the house and now updated with agenda for nearly everyone, I ran the numbers and we kind of come up at 37.5% of the top 16 is Lannister. So virtually the same at 38. And I don't know. It of course concerns me a little bit. That seems way above what I would expect in this broad of a field as far as factions go. And I'm hoping FFG kind of makes some kind of move on this, whether that winds up finally being a second edition restricted list or what. I don't know, but I really expect and hope for something.
I would not be surprised if we see a real restricted list after Worlds. I think there's probably enough data, and there's certainly going to be, enough a community groundswell if you just sort of look everywhere from both the FFG streams chat to the Facebook group, just everyone who's sort of following along, the amount of people who are upset that Lannister was so amazingly overrepresented, really, I think we're in for another phase of sort of high Lannister hate and a call for a restricted list. And I think Nate and Danny may listen this time.
Yeah, we've also got kind of a density of larger tournaments this week, because we also had the Laughing Tree tournament, which I think had a very respectable showing for a community event the night before Worlds at 84 players, I believe it was. I didn't catch what the overall breakdown was on houses, but did I hear correctly that 10 out of the top 16
that sounds about right.
were Lannister for Laughing Tree? Yeah, so
it's also important to note that Laughing Tree didn't have a cut.
Oh, it did not. I did not realize that.
Yeah, it was just Swiss, and then they just announced top 8.
Gotcha. But still, if you played out the Swiss, like you're looking at the same numbers that we are, or the same type of breakdown as we are for the top 16 of Worlds, because this is, of course, before those games are played. So I don't know, and we'll see how big IO Worlds winds up being this weekend. I don't think it's going to compete in size by any means, but I think it'll be respectable, and I think there's going to be some high profile folks there, a couple champs and whatnot. So just, I mean, all told this week, tallying all of that, I think is going to be a pretty strong snapshot of where things are for FFG.
I'm really excited that Sid is in the top. Sad to see that, that my buddy Chris didn't make it. He played really well today. He was 3-2 at one point and then won his next few games and then lost in the final round of Swiss. It happens, I suppose. Sounds like the tournament structure was a little unsatisfactory to some people. I don't know.
Top 16, yeah.
Did we talk about the pairings yet?
No. No. Yeah, the pairings in the top 16 are super wonky. Off air, Will, Roy, and I ran through like all the different permutations of the ways that they could probably try to do it, whether it was true bracket or true Swiss, and we can't figure out exactly the methodology of pairings, and I think it's extended strength of schedule.
Yeah, I mean, that's as good a guess as any right now. Probably better than some others, but I'm just very surprised by that, as it's not anything that I've seen listed in any rules documents or updates, and it's very different from what has been the commonly accepted way to run pairings for a cut for the last, you know, umpteen years that FFG has been running these events. So I'm surprised, and I guess maybe just troubled that it's not been clarified or announced, really, that we are aware of.
There's nothing in the tournament documents to support, like, really any decisions, so I guess they could really do it however they want. But,
yeah.
I remember, like, at regionals, when we were in the cut, you know, we all just kind of policed ourselves, and the TO was like, oh, you know how to do this. And, you know, we just did a true bracket style.
That's how I've always seen it. And that's how it was at Gen Con in the last 2 years. I believe that's how it was at Worlds last year. So.
Yeah. By convention, I believe that's how it's always been. Let me put it this way. I've been playing since 02, and off the top of my head, I cannot remember a large event, Worlds, Gen Con, whatnot, that it has not been true bracket until now.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. It's not right. The end of the world.
There's arguments against true bracket, right? I mean, the question is, in Thrones, is it really a reward for the first player to play the 16th player? Because what happens when the... Yeah, it's a matchup based game.
Depends
right?
on the matchup, yeah.
So,
yeah, King of Swiss doesn't actually mean anything unless you get a buy.
It is, but like,
but y'all have talked
doing
about
it by extended strength of schedule, is that any benefit? Arguably, no. It's basically the same kind of crapshoot as being paired against the bottom seed. But it is a lot more of a hassle to make sure is figured correctly. So, I don't know, I would just personally tend towards the easiest and more straightforward option if, you know, the benefits are virtually the same.
And there I agree, Will. I do think even if there's drawbacks to a traditional bracket, it's probably the best way to go about it.
Sure, I don't really have a preference. I don't think that either one is like particularly awful or great. So,
Just an oddity we wanted to acknowledge.
Just want to say that SoCal did well and Europe did well.
Indeed, and not much else from America.
Pretty much, yeah. But I think that that's interesting, though. There's always sort of the implicit U.S. versus Europe kind of debate, and I wish that there were more players from the Asian metas that were able to represent, because I think that their meta is even, like, sort of disparate from our own and Europe's entirely as well. So, I don't know. I like that Europe is showing up strong, but it is important to note, as Alex said, like, you know, they're only sending their national champions, so, like, these are the best players in those particular metas. So, I don't know, I think that overall, despite the low turnout, this Worlds is shaping up to be super interesting. I can't
absolutely
wait to watch
there
the tomorrow.
I definitely agree. I think it's not really surprising to me, the cut. I think it's largely along the lines that I kind of expected. I think it's because SoCal this year was one of the larger teams. You know, it looks like that the DC Wisconsin guys didn't bring a single deck this year, like a one deck. They didn't really build as a team, and they're still represented by Sam Bratz, and you know Sam's a good bet. And they were a little smaller, particularly in the DC end, and Simone as well, right? So they have two people, and then you have the Brotherhood guys who brought five people. That team placed somebody in the top 16, and then SoCal, which is the largest one for the U.S. side, placed people, and then you know Europe brought a strong from cohort of national champions. So really the groups that put the effort into building their decks and playing as a team and putting the best players forward in the case of Europe, and then you see the groups that built together and came as a team, succeeded really well.
Yeah, but not,
I'd say the quality of their player was higher than the average. So for U.S. players, if you want to do well at Worlds, you should be part of a team. And then for Europeans, you know, because they consistently bring their best players, they have an excellent chance of making the cut. Anyway, my point was just that the Europeans also have a lot of experience playing in larger tournaments thanks to the road to Stalic. So
all I'm saying is that I think that y'all on Second Sons, depending on the outcome of this Worlds, have some amazing
we really do.
Content.
We
because y'all, like, actually get to talk shit, like, across the Atlantic. Like, that's amazing. So, I'm excited
to
listen
to it. Well,
hopefully
Sid will be champion, and so we'll just have the world champion on our show.
Yeah, how about props and slops?
Well, I spent all my props and slops basically for this week in our little world segment there, so I will...
Oh, whoops. I didn't realize...
It's okay, Will. So I will turn over to Luke, who I hear has a lot. So.
Okay, so first, props to the indie meta. I'm really excited that Chris and Jess and Steve all got to go to Worlds. Not sure if Brian got to go or not, but Chris did really well, missed out on the cut, but he had a good showing. Jess is a really good player. They're just, like, in my opinion, one of the best Thrones couples in the world, so I would put money on them over pretty much anybody right now. I want to prop the Lord of the Rings LCG, because I've actually gotten a couple people who have never played games before, period, into that game because they're lit nuts like me, and they just love to read, and they read stuff when they were kids that was all Tolkien and whatnot, and we're playing it now. We got to play a few quests with some of the other people in Central Indy over the weekend, and it was a blast. I want to tentatively prop myself, because I have a poem coming out for publication in an anthology that's a literary magazine that publishes a couple times a year. This is their prize edition, where I was a top 8 finalist with my poem that was in the running for $1,000. Ultimately didn't make that very final cut, but there were over 2,000 entries, and I made top 8, so I'm really proud of that. And props to Steven Scantrell for the game that he played on the stream against Ryan Wood. I think that that game was just the epitome of good sportsmanship, and if you have a chance to go watch that, you should. Props to Team Europe for bringing awesome weird decks and kicking ass at Worlds, and then slopped to the selection.
Man, that is just about everything all together. I guess I should have thought of more. At the moment, all I have is a prop to this Amaro that I am drinking here to cap off the end of the episode. It is from Jay Rieger, a distillery up in Kansas City, so relatively nearby me, certainly from my home state anyway. Double check that it's not Kansas City, Kansas. But regardless, it's the first I've kind of tried anything like this. It's a bitter coffee liqueur, and it's delicious.
Will. Props to Storm Raiders, and I want that card back.
That would be very interesting in the second edition metagame. For the listeners, it was a CCG era Greyjoy army. I won't trouble you with the stats, but it
the stats were gross. Locations. That's what made it so good. Well, stats were gross.
I mean, it was in the CCG, but
dude, it's still crazy in second ed. It was 5 for 5 Bicon with renown.
Yes, it was. And when it came into play, it destroyed every location in play, and then you could not play locations while it was in play. That would, I think, be very interesting.
Have to be a unique character.
I think it would actually have less impact.
Go Storm Raiders!
Well, there you have it. I guess the Storm Raiders would, fact, Ooh, be the dangerous
something one. Something chapter. Something white book.
You do have access to post.
I do. Oh, I'm watching. Don't worry, Will. I'm trying to do a solid.
Will, we may want to consider putting out a call for submissions.
After you put up the real ones, can you put up a bunch of fake results on Second Sons?
I don't have the time to do that, dude. You want me to create all this content for Second Sons, and you never do any work.
Content. I definitely don't do any work.
So I don't want to hear
what content. What content?
You're always like, Roy, do this. Roy, do that. Roy, edit the episode. Roy, do this.
I've never told anyone to edit an episode of Second Sons. That's a lie.
No, actually, Roy, it used to be that he would just message you to message me the episode, and then I would have to put it up on the whiteboard.
Yes. So but no I do one, a lot no of one, things, Blazer.
No one edited any of that. You do a lot of things.
So no, I will not be doing that tonight.
He'll troll enough.
I don't enjoy trolling.
That's not true. You just don't know you enjoy trolling.
Well, if every episode of Second Sons didn't suck, then it wouldn't be a big deal.
Well, they're the worst. That's kind of the point.
Well, it doesn't stop it from sucking.
No. I would intend...
Okay. Exactly. My logic is so bad that it exploded your head.
It really did. I gave up in the middle of my sentence. Like, I don't care. Fuck it. Your logic is the golden tooth of logic.